Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:11 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 8th, and volatility picked up again in here today. It was up 7. What this is a clear signal of is that the breaking of the short volatility trade, the risk parity trades that have been the primary characteristic of the increasing leverage that we're seeing in stock markets is broken. And now we're starting to see the unwinding of a high degree of leverage that has been pushed into these kinds of strategies. Well, we've already seen that the funds like XIV are going to disappear by the end of this month. And the short volatility ETNs will probably be a thing of the past by the time we get around to this time next year. Then when we look at risk parity, well, that tends to do best when bond yields are going one way and equities the other. But right now, bond yields are pushing higher and equities are moving lower at the same time, and they lose money. And one of the important things to, I think, be aware of with the vast majority of algorithmic trading systems is that they all have different buy and sell mechanisms, and they have different ways of offsetting risk against the various asset classes. But when it comes to position sizing, then the volatility measures tend to play an outsized part. And here we look at the volatility index that has gone from under 10 at the end of last year to 35 today. And therefore, what that is resulting in is in leveraged positions having to be reduced. And there is no doubt that there was a lot of volatility that was baked into this short volatility trade, because the volatility measure is calculated on an average basis, and when you've got very low prices for a prolonged period, the average price deteriorates. It makes it more susceptible to rally strongly when you get a move in stock markets. But what it is creating is a feedback loop into the equity markets, and the Dow Jones was down in an extra 1,000 points in here today. So it is now closing at a new low, and it is below the 24,000 level. Now, when we look at this reaction on a weekly basis, we can see that the market did accelerate, and now we are getting, so that is a type 1 trend ending characteristic. Now we're getting a type 2 trend ending characteristic. It's a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and we do not yet have evidence that it is over, but it is rapidly closing the overextension relative to the trend mean, and there will certainly be some people that are willing to buy this kind of dip. Buying the dips has worked remarkably well since 2009, and there was a cacophony of people on Wall Street saying buy the dip last week. I posted the chart and comment of the day yesterday, which was highlighting the number of times that the words healthy correction had popped up in the articles on Bloomberg over the course of the last week, and it had surged higher. So there were still a lot of people that wanted to buy the dip, and they certainly bought the dip a couple of days ago, but now we're starting to see prices coming back down again. Then that is at least in part due to, I think, a fair amount of angst about the new central bank governor in the USA, Jay Powell. There's a big question as to whether we're going to have a Powell put, just like we had a Greenspan put, a Bernanke put, and a Yellen put. And when we look at what's going on in the bond markets, well, the 10-year yield is pushing up towards this at 3% level. And 3% is a big psychological perception stage here for the bond markets. And we're right now at 2.833%. So about 17 basis points away from the peak that was seen back during the taper tantrum. And it's unlikely that the Fed is about to start to reduce their positioning they're about to ride to the rescue when all we're seeing so far is a reversion to the mean. When we look at the size of the Fed's balance sheet, we can see that it is starting to contract, and the pace of the contraction picked up at the end of January, and we'll next get this updated at the end of February. So there is the This is, I think, a big question, and it's been a big question for at least the last 4 or 5 months. How is it that the Fed can reduce the size of its balance sheet, raise interest rates, and not expect the Treasury yield to increase? And that's in the best of times, not when we're in a period where the Treasury is about to start issuing even more bonds. And there was another pretty tepid reception to its auction in here today. So that is why yields are pushing higher, because we're getting the very real prospect that bond vigilantes will resurface once more. And when it comes to the prospect of an infrastructure bill being proposed by the middle of the year, well, that might well be met with some opposition by bond investors, who will probably be demanding that they get a higher compensation in order to support that by purchases. So this is, I think, the primary reason behind this correction. But perhaps the important point is, and maybe if we look at gold, for one point is that gold was steady in here today. It was well off its low. It's been pulling back from that $1,350 area, and then what do we get here? Is we're at the upper side of an 18-month range. We're getting some consolidation, unwinding of the short-term overbought condition. But as long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, I think then the balance of probabilities is that gold has the potential to steady from here and potentially even break out. It is certainly worth watching. But that's not the reason I was pulling it up in this particular occasion. If we go back and look at 2011, gold had accelerated to its peak at 1900. So that was a type 1 trend ending characteristic. Then we get the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. It pulled back incredibly sharply. And then it ranged for nearly a year and a half before breaking down. And that is very common in a type 2 top, that you get the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. People look around and say, well, what's really changed? And when they start thinking about that on a fundamental basis, well, they can't really answer it. So then that justifies having positions. And then there is the other side of the equation, where people will have been justifiably traumatized by the speed of the decline. They'll be less inclined to buy or increase their positions, but they won't have had quite the catalyst to liquidate their positions. So you get this range where supply and demand comes back into balance. And one of the maxims from the chart seminar over many years has been that a lengthier range, particularly following one of a trend that was very consistent, is seldom a reliable continuation pattern. So when we think about what is it that's going on in stock markets right now, well, we have to think that there is the potential here that we could be ranging for some time, but then it has the potential to represent a top formation because we've had the acceleration. The market did not accelerate into the peak in 2014 and 15. We were subject to some acute bouts of volatility, but then things started to improve in 2016. The economy started improving. The global economy moved on to a period of synchronized global economic expansion, and then you had the business-friendly Trump administration winning the US election. So that all contributed to a very bullish environment for stock markets generally, and now some of that is being unwound. Well, I think keeping an eye on what's going on in Korea is perhaps rather instructive at this stage, because that economy contracted in December. When people look at synchronized global economic expansion, they usually look at the top 10 economies in the world. And South Korea just happens to be the 11th largest economy in the world, so it probably falls out of that calculation. Well, if their economy contracts in the first quarter of this year, they'll be in recession. And then that is certainly going to raise some questions about the conclusion that we are in a period of synchronized global economic expansion. Now, this index has already pulled back to the region of its trend mean. The Taiwanese market has already bounced, or at least paused, in the region of the trend mean. But the problem for a lot of these markets is that because Wall Street has pulled back by 1,000 points on the Dow in here today, well, then that's going to represent additional downside pressure for some of these indices as well. So the Nikkei, which had paused in the region of the trend mean, is likely to be in negative territory in here tomorrow. Then when we look at the A-share index in China, well, that has already pulled back below the trend mean, and in fact is at a new reaction low. It is leading the market lower, and the Shanghai Property Index, which had broken out in very impressive form from the beginning of this year, has pulled back violently in here over the last couple of days. Let me see if I can remember the 10-year Chinese government bond ticker. And we can see that it is pushing up, and it's already at 4%. This is a very long-term range over the last decade. I saw some figures that the CDS spread for China was already at rather high levels. Let me see if I can replicate that chart. What we can certainly see here is that the that those what and this is already an example of the kind of headlines that you get is that the headlines I saw said that China's CDS spread was pushing to new highs, whereas it has in fact just unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean. But more importantly, it has broken that progression of lower rally highs, and it suggests that the risk is moving higher here from very contracting levels. And that is not just simply about volatility or indeed any asset class, but that the potential for more risk to be priced into markets because of the unwinding of volatility, which is a direct correlation to the uptick in volatility, is something that is now being priced into markets. And what that also means is that when we look at the shares that have still got these wide overextensions relative to the trend mean, then we have to at least begin to consider that they are going to unwind those overbought conditions. And Apple, for example, has got a history of pulling back in a violent manner from overextensions. And right now, it is still almost $300 above its trend mean. Boeing is the largest constituent on the Dow Jones, and it is still sporting a very wide overextension relative to the trend mean. Nvidia, which has been a darling of the technology sector for quite a long time, is now substantially more volatile than it was on the way up, and it is still off its lows. But the reality is that it is also approximately $40 overextended relative to the trend mean. Even in the gaming sector, which has been surging higher, then we have a failed upside break on Take-Two, and it was pulling back in a violent manner in here today. And these are important downdrafts. They are completely out of character with the kind of trading activity that we've had over the last few years. This is not simply a blip. This is topping activity, and I think that is perhaps the most important takeaway here, is that when we get these massive reactions against the prevailing trend, they take time to recover from, and that's a best case scenario. And in a worst case scenario, then we get chronic or deterioration in the consistency characteristics of trends, where the moving average no longer offers support but rather begins to represent resistance. If we see that kind of eventuality unfolding, well, then that will lead us to the conclusion that we have completed top formations. So this is an important juncture here, where we have US 10-year treasuries approaching 3% and a significant number of global indices in the region of their respective trend means. And that is equally the case in Europe, where the Euro stocks broke below its trend mean in here today and finished on the low of the day. The FTSE 100 has pulled back to test this 7,000 level again. And that represents the upper side of a long-term base formation. So the extent to which it can hold this level will, I think, it is the hallmark of a completed base formation, that you, when you do get a first step above the base, that the upper side of the underlying range represents a support level, whereas previously it had represented resistance. So the FTSE will have to hold the region of 7,000 if the return to demand dominance is to be given the benefit of the doubt. UK gilts, on the other hand, are completing a year-long range and are pushing on to new high ground. That is on news that the Bank of England is looking at raising interest rates, but their ability to raise interest rates will be contingent on exactly what happens with the Brexit negotiations, and that remains a substantial uncertainty. So the pound did not hold its rally in here today, at least in part because of recognition that the outlook for the Brexit negotiations remains a substantial uncertainty for the currency, the bonds and the stock market. Then when we look at the oil price, well, it hasn't pulled back by more than $5 since June, but it is back below $65 in here today. So now this this trend from June of this year is inconsistent. It has had a larger reaction and it is pulling back into the underlying trading range. So then we have had a complete deterioration in this trend's consistency characteristics, and that would suggest that we are now at least in a short-term supply-dominated environment. When we look at it on a weekly basis, then the region of the moving average is around $60, and $60 was a psychological area of resistance on the way up, so it may offer some support, and the best case scenario now is that we get a range between $60 and $70, but it will have to demonstrate support in this area. I think an important point is that a lot of the debt issuance so far this year has been in oil and gas, and that's in the high yield sector. So when we think about it in those terms, we've already seen just this week that a substantial number of the major oil companies have increased their dividends, and they are in many respects awash in cash. But that is very much a factor of oil prices being high. And the smaller companies have been increasing their spending on drilling. So that is increasing supply. And the USA was pumping more than 10 million barrels in the third quarter of last year. So we know that there is ample supply coming in around the $70 area. And that is contributing to prices starting to come back down again. So now we know that $70 is the level where a lot of additional supply comes back into the market. And a lot of high yield issuance in the first month of this year in the oil and gas sector is contributing to that conclusion. What it also means is that when we look at high yield spreads, part of the reason that they have not moved more is because of oil prices. And oil prices are having an outsized impact on the high yield spread index. But if oil prices continue to deteriorate, well, then it would be reasonable that high yield spreads, when they are so dependent on the outlook for high yield energy issuers, would also begin to expand. So I think this is an important point to consider. When we look at the junk bond ETFs, then they are breaking down and certainly rolling over in here. And rather than finding support in the region of the trend mean all the way through 2017 until just the last month of the year, they are now encountering resistance at that level. And this looks like a supply-dominated environment. So we are certainly still in a corrective phase, and the VIX index has pushed up in a dynamic manner. And when we look at that on a longer term basis, the level is now pretty much at the level that it was back in 2015. The upper side of the range and the 50 level is on a par with the kinds of reactions we saw in 2010 and 2011. But we are coming from much lower levels. And I think that the influence of those lower levels is contributing to the volatility of the VIX. So when we do look at the volatility of the VIX, we can see that it's coming off of a somewhat higher level that the volatility of the measure itself was somewhat higher in the last third of last year, and it is now at significantly higher levels than even we saw back in 2008, and that is because of that compounding effect, because the measure was so very low for so long last year. But in many respects, that is a very much a financial situation, and it is contributing to a lot of deleveraging. That is something that is going to wind its way through the markets over the course of the next few days and indeed weeks. But then the chances are that the stock market will be able to regroup and will start to rally once more. So that will contribute to a ranging phase. There will be people looking at this market and beginning to look for value. And what, for example, in here, Twitter today had its first positive quarter, and it was able to break up and out of its base formation. So TripAdvisor was another share that has been in the absolute doldrums and is now pushing above its trend mean, because people are beginning to consider that it may be taken over. So when we think about the fact that there are instruments out there that are way overextended relative to their trend means, then we also have to think that there are plenty of shares that did not take part in the acceleration that we saw in the latter half of last year. They are not nearly as overextended on the upside, and therefore we have the potential here for the shakeout to create buying opportunities. I think that is one of the important points to consider, despite the fact that the chances of mean reversion in some of those that did accelerate higher are becoming progressively more compelling, and that suggests that we are still in a corrective phase, and that this corrective phase is probably medium term in nature, and that means that we've seen a peak in the market of at least near term significance, and this is probably a medium term correction which can last for anything from 6 to 18 months, and I think that is perhaps the most important conclusion to draw. When we then think about, well, what is it that generally tends to offer a safe haven in these kinds of environments? Well, gold is certainly in there with a fighting chance. And then the yen is steadying up in here because of unwinding of leverage and carry trades. And the yen is now back to 108, which is at the are the dollars, the lower side of the dollars range here. So if it strengthens through it, well, then that would be an additional indication that we're in a risk-off mode and a deleveraging mode. And I think that certainly the Japanese market, which has been, I think, one of the best candidates to act as an inflation hedge. It was interesting that the Topix Banks Index bounced from the region of the 200-day moving average in here today. It does not have nearly the same overextension that a significant number of popular markets have. And if we are moving back into an inflationary cycle, and I think that that has to be at least considered in here, then Japanese banks have been very low for a very long time, and any pullback can be considered as a buying opportunity. So certainly there's a lot going on, and when we think about what the risks are, then we also have to consider that there are opportunities. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.